Hi.
Do I have sound?
Yes, I have sound. Okay. Turn it up. Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Leftovers. I know, you're curious about 6. They will be ready to hand back at the final exam or before. Must be the end of the semester when the graduate teaching fellows start throwing things at students, right? She's normally so mild-mannered, too. Did she get you? Yeah. Julie has a little presentation in one of her courses today. How long?
2 hours.
2 hours. Oh, my God. So you too can go to graduate school and have 2-hour presentations to do. Yeah. Okay, we are review session about 4 o'clock on Monday, a week from today. Time and place to be announced. I mean, is it about 4? So I think that will hold. I would hold one on Friday if there were enough people who wanted to do that, Friday afternoon. Oh. How many of you would like one Friday afternoon? Okay. 2 o'clock? 3 o'clock? 2? 2? Okay. Okay. Remind me. I will arrange that. I'm sorry? Part of next class, we will spend reviewing, and for that, I would like you to bring questions or examples or things that you would like us to consider on Wednesday. If you would like to email me those questions before class on Wednesday, I would be happy to have those so that I could think about them too.
Is the test on the lecture notes or specifically on details of the reading?
Everything.
Everything?
The exam covers everything.
And Bronfenbrenner?
The family context of human development. Your thoughts about it, my thoughts about it, the lectures, the Devalcology book, all of the readings, Galinsky. And again, the point in the readings, the questions on the readings will not be, which of the following is one of the 6 things that Galinsky said happened during the departure stage. Blah. What I'm more interested in is that you understand how the stages of parenting operate in Galinsky's view and how those could be interpreted using a developmental perspective and some of the variations on those. But I'm not going to ask significantly detailed questions because there's too much and because I don't like them and because I'm interested in the larger ideas. There will be multiple choice, some short answer. Some very short essay. Very short. You say you're halfway done with number 6. Huh? Mary Beth. No. The question was how many points on the exam so that you would know what the total... No, but you'll all have the same exam and the same number of points. Julie's suggesting that if her recall is correct, there might have been something like 100 points last year. Which means we haven't dug out last year's exam because we're starting from scratch. So we'll see. Other questions? Okay. Then I'll ask a question. In developmental terms, why would order of birth among siblings in a family have any effect on personality? Funny so that people will pay attention to you. Some of you chose the other path to attention. Right? You make trouble. You're a pain in the butt. So, the parent expectations of the roles of each child might be different, and the parent-child dyad might differ. Okay, so children would go through the changes, but would they all go through the changes? Firstborn and middle and later born would all go through the changes.
Yeah, they'll be affected differently by like one child's change as they go
on. Okay, what's going to be affected by each child going through those changes? Okay, so. But that's going to happen to everybody, right? How they are affected, how the parent-child relationship is affected. It's going to happen to everybody. Okay, so maybe the context changes. How many of you grew up in the same house through your entire growing up period? How many of you moved three or four times? Okay. And how many of you had siblings who were born in someplace else and had a different setting? Okay. So possibly over time, the siblings experience a different setting. So they might go to different schools. Some of us start off in teeny tiny little apartments until we drive our parents nuts as firstborns. And then they move. And then the second and third and fourth in the family don't have the teeny tiny little apartment setting. They get to go to the big house in the country or the suburbs. Other thoughts about why siblings would differ? Okay, so the chronosystem it's not only different settings, but different macro system features. Some of you came through schools that did portfolios in Vermont, and you have younger siblings in high schools who now have high-stakes testing. But why does all this affect personality? And why can we generalize across firstborns and secondborns and thirdborns, middles and laterborns? Now, when all of you grew up in different states and different settings, you had different parents. Think about the family as a microsystem, and think about what happens as each child experiences that microsystem. There are commonalities across all families. Not that they'll all be the same, but every firstborn is going to have no competition with other siblings. So the dyadic relationship that that kid can have is there's no competition, all the attention is on me. I may have two significant developmental dyads with people who, to the extent that they give any time at all to kids, are giving it all to me. All my joint activities within the family are with people who are more developed than I am and can teach me things. And they're all smart enough to figure out what I might want. So firstborn children always, with some exceptions, if you've got foster kids who are older, then you're not really a firstborn. But all firstborns have the potential to have a microsystem that includes three dyads, and all of the joint activities are with people who are older, wiser, committed to the child's development. And if you continue in that role as an only, you get to do that the rest of your growing up years. You're the only kid. You're the only one. Everybody focuses on you. You're the center of attention. And that microsystem continues. And that's the one in which you are developing your understanding of yourself, your role in the world, the opportunities that you have, the activities that you can engage in, the way to relate to people. That's it. So onlys are likely to grow up focused on competence, being used to being the center of attention. They never have to share their toys, except when their cousins come over and then they fight. Some firstborns then have younger siblings. Their role changes, and they still have the relationship with people who are more developed than they are, but they also then get to add somebody who is younger, somebody who is less powerful, somebody who can't reciprocate, somebody to take care of, so they get to play that role. They get to play nurturing younger siblings. So that's a different microsystem because it adds another dyad in which the firstborn is always among the sib set. The set of sibs. The sib set, the firstborn is always the more powerful, the more dominant, the more skilled, the developed end of the developmental dyad with younger siblings. So if you're thinking about having a relationship with peers, sibs are closest to peers, and the firstborn then spends all of that family time being the leader. And the younger siblings play follow the leader. The firstborn is still doing everything first. The parents are still experiencing all the milestones first with that particular child. Okay? So the experience, the microsystem experienced by the firstborn is going to be different. It's going to be different from the microsystem experienced by an only because of the addition of this annoying, incompetent, fawning, doting, admiring little sibling who's going to follow you around all through life. And the later sibling's always going to follow the older sibling. So what's the role of the secondborn? The secondborn never gets the undivided attention of parents. The secondborn always has somebody more competent. The secondborn learns to play the follower role. The secondborn rarely gets to do something for the first time. It may help if the secondborn is not the same sex as the firstborn. Then you get to be the first boy or the first girl, and you will have somewhat different relationships. You do get to be first. You may have then more attention from one parent or another than the firstborn does because you're the same sex as that parent. So you may have a father who's thrilled to be able to leave the firstborn girl to mom and take over the rearing of the firstborn son who's going to be the ball player. So the roles may get differentiated on the basis of sex. So the first and secondborns may be different. If they're the same sex, there you are as the follower. So you get to practice that dyadic relationship of being less well-developed, less powerful, less able to reciprocate, less able to pay back. And you get to play that one until big brother or big sister goes off to college. Then you get to figure out at 15 that, okay, it's my house now. Move his stuff out. Now I'm going to be a firstborn. And that may be uncomfortable, actually, to suddenly be the oldest in the family. Okay. So what a developmental view suggests is that each child in the family, in fact, has a different position. Each child in the family experiences a different microsystem, different nature of dyadic relationships, and a microsystem that gets changed for each child gets changed by the birth of that child. But it changes in different ways. The firstborn changes the couple into a triad and is the center of attention. The secondborn adds a potential competitive dyad to the firstborn, who now gets kicked out of the only child position. And the secondborn gets to follow and compete for the attention of parents. Add a third. The third comes in, can't do anything new, unless, again, you're the first of your sex. Then you get to be the first boy or the first girl with two older of the other sex. Yeah. So that position is potentially different. But you have two people telling you what to do. Two people who are more accomplished than you are. Two people who have the parental attention. And there you are, struggling along, happily out of the limelight, learning to live with a dirty diaper because everybody's too busy to change it. Learning to give up, or share, as we call it. Give up what you have, because the older people in the family can take it away from you. And how do you survive in the world? How do you establish yourself as a unique individual? So the dyads that each child are going to, that each child is going to experience are different, and that whole system, the whole family microsystem, is different for each of them. And although parents are happy to say we treat all of our children the same, that is quite frankly bullshit. They just can't. You can't treat people who are born a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years apart the same. If you try, you'll frustrate the younger ones who don't have a clue what's going on, or you'll annoy the heck out of the firstborn who's much more competent than you're giving him or her credit for. You can't not respond to the firstborn's accomplishments as if they're first. And you can't treat the second and third and fourth child's accomplishments as if you've never seen them before. Because you have seen them before. And for most parents, by the time you have your third or fourth kid going to school, the first one you go out to the school bus with. You want to go on the bus with. You want to know everything that's going on. So, because this is a big deal. First kid going to school. Fourth one, you hand a paper bag and say, see you next week. Kid goes to the bus with his siblings. Doesn't need you. Goes out there with the siblings who get to play parental role with the third or fourth one because they're big enough to be in charge. And by that time, frankly, you're tired. You're quite happy not to have to do all of those things for the younger children, so you're pushing that role off onto the first and second born to take care of the younger ones. So the parental expectations not only are different for each child, but they change with the birth of each child. As children progress, firstborns, as they get older, are expected to take care of, given the opportunity to babysit for younger siblings. Paid for that in some families. It's demanded of them in others. I regularly remember the comment of a student who had seven older or younger brothers and sisters, and they were about 3 years apart. And in the family systems course, she was describing her family constellation, and she said it seemed to her that about the time she hit about 12, her mother was the baby machine and she was the mother, because her parents expected her to take care of the new babies as they came along. And she began to figure out by the time she was about 15 that she was being lost a word. I'm trying to remember her word. Exploited was her word. Because as these kids came along, she wasn't responsible for their conception or birth. And nobody asked her if she wanted another sibling to take care of. It was just expected of her. And she describes herself as a compliant child who began to focus at 15 on going to college. And she said it wasn't a big deal in her family to go to college. It wasn't expected. Nobody ever had. But she saw a possible way of escaping the parental role. And she did. And she came to UVM and she never went home again. She says, I got my first job in the summer at UVM and never went home again because I knew that if I did, there'd be work for me to do. So she bailed. Interestingly, in that position, one of the common ways for oldest daughters to get out of the family is to identify with mother and decide to become a parent and have the babies themselves as well. Now, one of the ways you get out of the family is to find a hapless male, get pregnant, get married, and then you go do it all over again yourself. She was too smart for that. She said, I've done my parenting. Now I want to go be me, get an education, do parent education, which is what she's doing now, and eventually maybe get married and have a child or two. So the possible roles, the possible responsibilities, the potential parental expectations are different all down the line. That youngest born is never expected to take care of anybody else. You just get to play, right? You just get to be the baby. You get to play. Everybody takes care of you. Your role is different. Also, by the time you get to be third, fourth, or fifth, my point with the story was that parents are, even if they're still happily producing children, they may not be paying a great deal of attention to them because they're overwhelmed with having so many. So firstborn gets all the attention. Everybody else has to share, including the firstborn, as they come along. The expectations change. The only one who potentially can get all of the attention again is the youngest one as everybody else leaves home. And youngest borns often thrive on the fact that they're in the position of being the baby and learning to make the best of that. And then at the end of the sequence of children in the launching years, gets to be an only child for a little while. Okay. So if you think about the microsystem, everything in it is different for each child. And how it's different depends on sex and where you are in that position. It may also depend on temperament. And particular sibling order positions may exacerbate or take advantage of particular temperaments. So if you want a little summer activity, think about in a family how being a difficult child might be expressed in different sibling orders and what kind of problems you can make if you're the firstborn difficult child or if you're the lastborn and a difficult child or a middle. Think about the easy child. The student I was describing as the oldest of seven was an easy child and relatively compliant, happy to cooperate. She ended up raising a bunch of younger siblings. A difficult child in that situation might have become the abusive older sibling. So temperament and sex both engage in a transaction with sibling order and make the constellation of the family more complex. Okay, let's look at what Renkel describes in the reading that you have. Her basic points are that birth order can affect personality. You also have on the website an article or a summary of some research by Judy Dunn, who's also looked at these issues in considerable detail. I didn't assign the reading from Dunn, but if you look at it, you'll see some similar conclusions. Parents, Renkel says, can influence the effects of birth order because they are directing the transactions. So they can decide to focus on younger siblings, or they can create transactions, and Renkel's article has specifics about what the parents can do to direct the transactions for the firstborn or the middle or the lastborn or the only so as to help them deal with and cope with the sibling order potential. So it's not inevitable. The point of her article is to suggest that parents can influence how kids experience that different birth order and therefore what effect it may have on their personalities. And she clearly says that genes affect personality. It's not just birth order, but genes, as I've suggested, because genes drive temperament, genes drive gender. And she doesn't mention it, but I will. It's also possible that each child has a different intellectual style and responds to different aspects of the microsystem, and that may make the way they play the roles differently. But her research and Dunn's suggest that people in the same birth order position across families share some character traits. But the variables within each family will determine how they play out that potential or propensity. As she describes it, the firstborns get full parental attention. They're the first to each milestone, as I've suggested. And they tend to be focused and detail-oriented and possibly perfectionistic. And that, in her view, appears to come from the adult attention that they get. Adults see in a much more differentiated way and are likely to encourage firstborns to see the world as they do. And the kids are likely to try to come up to the parental standards. So they're struggling. Firstborns tend to struggle to get to the parental level, because they're always in that situation of trying to keep up with the people they're transacting with. Okay. These are all on the web, so you don't need to frantically write them down. Secondborns experience parents who are differently engaged. They're busier. She says they're calmer and more relaxed. A lot of the research suggests that, in fact, they're just busier and more distracted. And the result may be the same, which is that they don't pay as much attention to the second-born or third-born, because the microsystem has changed for them, too. Secondborns get to spend more time alone. They have more freedom to play. Firstborn is taking up parental time by making demands. Secondborns tend to be competent. This includes second and thirdborns, too. And they may be competitive. They may show off. They may have to be funny. A researcher named Soloway wrote a book a number of years ago about secondborns. He calls it Born to Rebel. Soloway argues that secondborns, because they are always following a firstborn, may be, as Renkel is suggesting, driven to create their own individuality, to establish themselves as different from the firstborn. And as they become competitive, Soloway suggests that they may become rebellious. And his book is a compilation both of research on the birth order but also biographies of famous revolutionaries who were second borns. And he argues that both males and females in the second born position are overrepresented among the world's revolutionaries, revolutionary in every sense of the word, creators, innovators, rebels, revolutionaries. He has people from all the famous revolutions, people who create a different way of thinking. And he says that secondborns are more likely to be prepared and be motivated to change things. Oh, great. Live with this, your parental expectation that you're going to be the problem kid. We're going to put you in foster care now, you know, and go on to the third. What that suggests is support for Renkel's proposition that parents really do have the potential to influence how kids deal with their sibling position. And it suggests that you might want to be careful as parents, how you present your expectations for first and second borns and third borns and for the baby. You might want to think about her suggestions about how you can help those kids be comfortable in their sibling position, but also not necessarily have to make waves because they're not getting any of your attention. If you know that that's possible, that second borns may have to create a lot of hassle for you in order to get your attention, you might remind yourself occasionally to pay attention when they're being good and to notice what they're doing. But if you're busy and the firstborn is getting your attention, it might be harder to do that. The reminder occasionally to notice all kids and what they're doing. Renkel suggests, and Dunn as well, that you spend individual time, one-on-one time, with every child regularly, that you know what every child is doing, that you pay attention to every child. And if you're limited in your ability to do that, maybe you should think about birth control. Maybe you don't want to have six or seven. Okay, some second-borns become middles. When that third-born comes along, the second-born's position changes from being second-born to being middle. And middle can include the second, third, fourth, everybody but the last. And in that position, I have to say something in the interest of full disclosure before I go on to this set of comments. I am a second born. Okay. I had an older brother and two younger siblings, so I'm second of four. So when we talk about better group skills, better relationship skills, better negotiating skills, being peacemakers, middle kids have the possibility, because they have had older and younger to negotiate with, they've been able to be nurtured by the older, they've been able to nurture the younger, they've learned to share in both directions, they've learned to moderate and mediate between the older and the younger, they've learned to communicate with people who have better communication skills than they, and to communicate with people who have less well-developed communication skills. So middleborns have the potential to become better at reading people, figuring out what the information needs are in each case, because the dyads that they experience, they engage in, are different. They have developmental dyads in both directions, and if they practice those skills and are encouraged to have good relationships with siblings on either side of them, both sides of them, then they're developing intellectual skills and social skills that they can take on into adulthood with them. They tend to become flexible and more adaptable. They have the potential, Renkel says, to become people who are taken seriously by their parents because of their middle position, but not to get overprotected. The youngest are likely to be overprotected. Sometimes the parents run more interference for the firstborn, because they're paving the way for that person. On the other hand, the middles may have to act up to be noticed. They may have ones on both sides of them who are are different in temperament and different in personality. And one of the possibilities for those who are less confident or perhaps slow to warm up is that they may withdraw. They may fade and let everybody else have the attention. One of the examples Dunn suggests is that middles often get away with much more by withdrawing and not calling attention to themselves. And that was certainly the case for me. I had an older brother who did a lot of things and was very active, and he got a lot of attention, and it was deserved. He wasn't as smart as I was or any of those things, but he was a good guy. And then I had a younger sister who was trying to establish her individuality, and she was a hellion. She's turned out okay. But I figured as long as my brother was making waves and my sister was making waves, there was a perfect niche that was not filled, being the really good kid, the one who didn't make waves, the one who was therefore his mother's favorite. And it was a very comfortable role. It was a very comfortable position. I was always sympathetic when my brother made waves. I was always sympathetic and helpful when my sister made waves. And I was very careful not to make waves. And is that why I'm still my mother's favorite? Because I'm thoughtful and flexible, and I took over the oldest child role when my brother died. So when he died at 40, there was another role open and necessary, so I stepped into that one. On top of that, there's also the genetic similarity. Although we're different sexes, my mother and I, believe it or not, temperamentally, we're very, very similar. We see the world in very similar ways. And I think I have more genetic load from her than from my father. They were both wonderful, so I couldn't lose. Okay. The babies, lastborns. Frankel suggests that they have the potential to be free spirits. They have lots of exposure to older children, lots of exposure to different activities, fewer responsibilities, so they tend to be fun-loving, and they may be the entertainers in the family. One of the ways you behave when you're not competent compared to everybody else is to be funnier than everybody else. And the youngest in a family has difficulty being more competent or as competent as anybody else. So one of the ways you can be competent is to be funny. I'm watching my grandson do that with his two older sisters. I was talking with his mother yesterday, my daughter, and he was cold and they'd been swimming and he was chilled and he was really tired and he was in the bathtub, and we have lots of conversations while she's giving kids baths. So there's Duncan making jokes. And my daughter's comment was, you know, he's the funniest kid she's ever seen. And then I had a phone conversation later with my son, and he said the same thing. You know, Duncan is the funniest kid he's ever seen. He's just always finding something to do that's funny. And I said, well, I've got this article for you by Renkel I'll send along. You can get it on my course reserves. It suggests that the youngest are kind of born into that role. They may become dependent. Duncan won't, I think. But
I'm the second born and the last born. Do you take more from the last born, or is it amalgamation?
The comment is that many of us are in two roles, particularly second borns, who are both second and youngest. The secondborns, who are the second of two, have two positions, second and baby, but they don't get the middle. So secondborns are not all alike. If you're in the middle of three or four, then the possibilities are greater because you have more kinds of dyads to be involved in. But Renkel suggests that what you do is look at the different positions that you have had and the different positions you have and pick and choose. But picking and choosing will be based on what kinds of dyadic relationships you had. What kinds of expectations were there for you? What were the temperament and sex, the gender differences among them? So the options are very large. The possibilities, possible combinations, are very large. Onlys tend to be higher achievers, more motivated, and don't take it personally, those of you who are onlys. They may have less peer relationship skill. One of the things that became evident in looking at the family systems course this year was that in the genograms of many of the families, there were onlys, and when we looked at their marriages, onlys across the whole class, the only children, not just in the students who were onlys, but in their parents who were onlys, and in extended family who were onlys, the age difference between partners, and spouses particularly, tended to be greater, and the onlys, even if they were male, tended to marry people who were older than they were. And the hypothesis came up that here's the firstborn, the only, with no sibset peer relationships, trying to recreate in marriage the relationship with somebody who is more highly developed. And that's represented by choosing a partner who's older than you are. I hadn't looked at that in previous classes, but it was an interesting observation from that group. Renkel talks about a couple of other variables. Very close spacing among siblings may make people more equal to each other, and large gaps may make a third or fourth who has 6 or 8 years between self and the next oldest may act more like an oldest because there's so little in common with the sibling who's 6 or 8 years older that you get to start over again. The parents are starting over. So your parents essentially had two families, two sets of children. One and then one plus three, and then a 7-year gap, and then another, and then another. So they recreated that. And this gap lets you essentially be an older child again. So they did it twice. And it may not be clear that that's what's happened until you get into that period when both of these are launched, and they're both launched while you're still in middle school, and there you are, and you get to go through all of high school as an oldest child. There are other situations in which that can happen, and one of those is when people blend families, or when they literally have a second family. I usually use as an example my cousin Dwayne, who has a son and a granddaughter who are the same age. second marriage. His daughter and his wife got pregnant at approximately the same time. And so he's chasing one son who's very, very active and very bright, getting exhausted by that. And if now the two grandchildren come over at the same time, he's ready to fail. So he literally had one that was completely done and launched, two children completely done and launched, and then started all over again in another relationship. And that's not uncommon. It's a pretty good advertisement for vasectomies. Okay. Leaving rankle behind. Here's a different kind of situation. Twins and triplets. Twins and triplets are in a unique position. Quadruplets too, but there's so few of them I don't have to talk about them. That they have a sibling of the same age. And interesting, when you look at birth order for twins, if you have a set of twins first, they are both firstborns, but they do it completely differently than a singleton firstborn. Twins can't be onlys. They don't get that option. If they're the second and have a singleton older sibling, they do being second child differently. How many of you are twins? One, two, three. Okay. You remember your twin's face and name?
Twins with a boy.
Boy?
Sister.
Sister, identical?
Yeah. Okay.
How come? How come? Yeah. Yeah. You're the good twin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So identicals are different from fraternals. Identicals have a special burden and sometimes a special bond. And opposite sex twins, who are always fraternals, have the gender issue between them and are much less different, typically. I'm sorry, much less similar. I knew that was wrong. Much less similar than same-sex fraternals. Again, how parents treat twins is important. I grew up with a set of identical girls who didn't have names. They were the twins. They were addressed as a unit by their parents, by their siblings, by everybody in the neighborhood, because you never knew which one you were talking to, so there was no point saying Marie or Marita, because you didn't know which one. So it was just much easier and cleaner to say the twins. Hey, twin. And that leads to some identity issues, which twins deal with in different ways. Some of them by becoming very different, some of them by taking advantage of the fact that they have an identical that nobody can tell. Okay. Having twins changes the microsystem and the parental responsibilities and busyness and all of that. Have I told you my Mothers of Twins and Triplets Club story? No. When I was at Pitt, we wanted to do some research on twins and triplets, and I made contact with the parents of Twins and Triplets Club in Allegheny County. And they were quite happy to have us as long as we provided programs for their meetings. So three or four of us did that for a while. And consultation to parents. And I got a call one day from the president of the club. And she said, can you go over to the hospital, McGee Women's Hospital, I said, well, she said, I've got a mother who just had a set of twins, and she's flipping out. And I said, well, I can't, but I've got a graduate student who might be able to go over today. I said, it would be really helpful. I said, well, tell me more about it. He said, well, and these were in the days when you didn't necessarily know that you were going to have twins, didn't know the sex of your child. That's how old I am. More mystery back then. And so I said, what was the issue? Did she not know she was going to have twins? And she said, well, she suspected she might, but she's just totally overwhelmed by it. I said, well, how do you understand that? She said, well, this is her fourth set. Right. Okay. So I can understand. I'll grab my graduate student and send him over. So we did. But then I said, I can understand how having eight children would send you over the edge. She said, no, this is 10 and 11. She has three singletons, too. And then the macro system issue came in. She said, she lowered her voice and she said, and they're not even Catholic. I have occasionally wondered how she and her kids grew up, how they survived. When you have a twin, you have the potential, particularly with an identical twin, and you're both healthy. Lots of twins have differences based on biological non-comparability. But if you're both similar in health and have no disabilities that make you different, then it's a unique opportunity to have somebody with whom you have complete equal power and reciprocity. And that can lead to very, very close relationships and an expectation for close relationships that sometimes gets you into trouble when you go out and try to find a partner and discover that nobody knows you like your twin does. And you expect to date somebody who's equally reciprocal with you and can read your mind. And most of us can't do that, so it can be a problem. Okay. More generally, sibling order, the spacing, and the constellation of the family shape the microsystem and the relationships within it. It defines the activities and the roles and what you can engage in. And the siblings in a family also define the family mesosystem. If you've got all girls, you engage in a different mesosystem potentially than if you have all boys. If you have a mixture, it depends on the ages. Who goes where, when? You go to the Girl Scouts, the Boy Scouts, the Brownies, the YMCA or the YWCA, and in what order? Parents create the roles and the relations and the expectations. And they do that either willy-nilly, falling into and being shaped by the microsystem they're in, but they have the potential to do it more deliberately, to be thoughtful about the roles and the relations. And then in that family, each person, parents as well as siblings, constructs a view of the world and the skills to deal with it. And you construct that view of the world and the particular skills and expectations that you have from the relationships experienced in the family system. I'm getting a signal. Okay. We'll leave that there. And on Wednesday, I want to spend just a few minutes talking about another major shift in the constellation of a family as an example. So you can think about what happens when parents have enough conflict and disagreement that they divorce, which is a major shift in how the family is structured. And the challenge for that would be to bring in your thoughts. We're not done. Julie's just signaling me. Okay. What I'd like you to do is bring in your thoughts about what happens to the microsystem of the family when the parents go their separate ways. And many of you have had experience with that, so you've thought about how you would understand the shifts in the microsystem. And we'll talk about that. What we get to do now is the course evaluation that we haven't done yet. And I'm going to need a volunteer who would be going toward living learning after. Got it. Thank you. So, your job is to collect these, follow the instructions, sign it, and deliver them to C-150. Yeah. And there are specific instructions for you. Yes, we would love help passing out. You will need a number 2 pencil. You going that way? No. I'm going to do this in a... Okay. I'm not going to do it in orderly fashion. I'm going to suggest you just pass these along.
Here you go.
I'm going to take one and pass them straight back. Just take them and pass them straight back. Back, yeah. Does anybody need a number 2? Excuse me. Obnoxious little things, aren't they? Oh, you're waiting for a Scantron. Good catch. I'll get it.
Oh, you're throwing things?
I'm throwing things. Yeah. Number 2.
Thank you.
Please be bubbles. Okay, does everybody have everything? When you are finished, please deliver them and any extras to the table in front.